Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. All right, now, in the WCHL family, we know Wayne Pond as the Word of the Day man.
That's right.
But in real life, Wayne, you've got one of the best jobs in Chapel Hill, in North Carolina, maybe one of the best jobs, maybe the best job in the whole world. As I see it, I know it's a hard job, but the idea that you're organizing seminars and events for people in Chapel Hill across the state, across the country, to come and be connected to great ideas, to great people, to great themes, to great projects, great learning experiences. I mean, what could be better?
Well, you're right, DG. I have got one of the great jobs. I'm a very, very lucky guy.
What is your job? All right, now that we've established that, what is it?
Let's keep
what is the title guessing. First?
My title is Director of the Program in the Humanities and Human Values. That is that's a long way of saying.
That doesn't sound all that exciting.
The UNC Humanities Program, which goes back to the spring of 1979. Under the leadership of people like Maynard Adams, who was a Keenan Professor of Philosophy, and Dwight Rhine, who was the Director of Continuing Education, Sam Williamson, who was the Dean of Arts and Sciences in those days, and certainly the humanities program would not have come into existence, would not have flourished the way it has without the inspired leadership of my predecessor, Warren Nord.
Thanks for mentioning all those people, and true enough, great people, and part of their legacy is in this program. But what is this program?
This program is the principal means of public outreach of the College of Arts and Sciences at UNC Chapel Hill. We have the School of Medicine, we have journalism, we have information and library science, we've got social work, public health, law. The college is what most people think about when they talk about UNC Chapel Hill.
It's an undergraduate school.
Sure,
where people come to learn about, learn to prepare for their life.
Exactly. Yeah. And when I say it's what most people think about, I am certainly not disparaging the other units on campus.
Right, but now, when
the chancellor talks about Carolina, typically, he's talking about the College of Arts and Sciences, and my program is the public outreach arm for arts and sciences.
So you take what the kids are learning in college and make some of that in different ways available for the rest of us.
What we do is offer a series of weekend and summer seminars for teachers, seminars for public leaders, for educators, school principals, aspiring superintendents, and we take the work of the faculty in the college, history, literature, philosophy, religion, all of those wonderful disciplines.
Let me mix them up for our
Seminars.
Just by way of illustration.
Let me rephrase that. We don't mix them up. We blend them.
Well, Wayne, this is a tough question because take off your hat as a director and put on your hat as a consumer of this experience that you offer.
Yeah.
And I don't pick a favorite, but pick one of the important programs that's meant something to you.
Mm-hmm.
That one of the past programs.
Okay.
And
well,
tell
I can
us
talk
about
something that we've done just in the immediate past present. You asked me to talk about adventures and ideas from the standpoint of the consumer. Our audience, DG, is basically the 55-plus set, laced together with lots and lots of public school teachers and community college instructors who come
get
to
– some credit for
that's
doing
right,
this.
Who come to Adventures and Ideas for a professional renewal credit. For the core of our audience, which is to say the people who have the time and the means to spend a Friday afternoon, an evening, and Saturday morning at one of our programs, Adventures and Ideas is like going back to college and sitting at the feet of your favorite professors and rereading the books that you either glanced off of or sometimes you became deeply immersed in, and you want to go back and you want to revisit these wonderful subjects from antiquity right up to the most contemporaneous kind of political debate. You asked me to name
your favorites.
Not a favorite, but I'll tell you about one that we just did that my colleague Sally Gray organized called Evolution and Ethics. The subtitle is From Darwin to Intelligent Design. Now, DG, you name a topic that isn't more in the headlines. This involves history. It involves religion. It involves biology.
Right, now, What did you learn?
What did I learn? Well, the truth is I didn't go to the seminar. I'm going to go to the repeat of the seminar. Mm-hmm. It was a complete sellout.
Yeah, well, we did this. There wasn't room for the director.
Yeah.
Well, now take one that you either attended or that you were there for most of the time.
Okay.
It had an impact on you.
Okay.
You know, that you're something that not just that you're selling to the rest of us, but that you can say, I went to this one. And here's what I learned.
Well, here I'll name another one that we did in early February. The title of the seminar was Tocqueville, Then and Now, Democracy in America and Its Legacies.
Love this topic. Were you able to
Who was Alexis de Tocqueville, D.C.? Come on, you tell me who he was.
Frenchman who came to the United States and told us who we were.
Yeah, this is a young French aristocrat who comes to the United States in 1830, ostensibly to write about penitentiaries. Mm-hmm. To write about the American penitentiary system. He ends up traveling basically all over the eastern seaboard. He has one foray into Kentucky, I think it was, and down into Georgia, or what was becoming Georgia, then makes his way back up the East Coast. And Democracy in America is, let's not kid ourselves. It's not pulp fiction. This is a bit of a tough read. But here is a book that in effect set the tone for so much of what we have inherited from overseas when it comes to what democracy is, how it works politically, culturally, in our social system. Tocqueville had a wonderful time on this trip, had a good time writing this book, and as I say, it sets a wonderful model.
Well, I'm just going to press you, Wayne.
Sure.
You're the interviewer. but a magnificent for me.
Yeah.
You know, this would have been a pleasure to hear Lloyd Kramer talk about this.
Lloyd,
somebody who knows
from our
France,
department,
France, and the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Just to hear him ruminate about what de Tocqueville did.
Well, but there are many ways that you can generalize about what Tocqueville said about America at the beginning of the 19th century. One of the things that stays with me about his observations is that democracy is a very deeply divided, controversial, messy political subject. It is not some neatly packaged, parachuted in from the outside kind of political theory. Tocqueville talks about race and class. He even talks a little bit about what we would now call gender issues in sex and sexuality. But essentially, he's making observations about how the American political system works. He's got two big themes that he's after. One of them is liberty. And the other one is equality. How do you balance these two things? If we're all equal and we're all free to do what we want, that's going to lead to some very deep political rubs.
Well, I would have liked to have been by your side at this seminar, basically to wrestle with the question of de Tocqueville's view of democracy as framed by the experience of the French democratic experiment, which didn't work out the same way
As Professor Kramer pointed out, Tocqueville is coming out of the context of the French Revolution. That's the platform that he's standing on when he makes these observations.
Well, now, did you watch anybody at the seminar? What were the participants?
I'm the company spokesman. They ate it up. They loved it.
Well, of course they did.
But
specifically, I mean, mm-hmm. What kind of questions did they ask, and what did they? Did they just sit there and listen to these?
Well, I'll give you a couple of for instances. One of the talks was on the literary and the cultural lineaments of the legacy that we've inherited from Tocqueville. And one of our professors in the English department, Jane Threlkills, one of the young superstars over there in Greenlaw Hall, talked about how Tocqueville, in his observation, sets the tone and essentially establishes thematically what America is going to develop into in literary terms. She talks about Emerson. She talked about Whitman. I mean, these are two of the great poets and writers about American democracy.
Now, not motivated by de Tocqueville, but observe these
themes.
Well,
seeds that he planted in the themes that he pursued and in the topics that he writes about, you can argue, I think, that they come maybe not to full fruition, but they come into to flower with writers like Whitman, who gives us this wonderful, immense, great bear of a poem called Leaves of Grass. And he writes a prose work called Democratic Vistas. Now, it is. I'm not suggesting that there are one-to-one correspondences between Tocqueville and Whitman, but you can see in Whitman the themes that Tocqueville has discussed.
And what you've shown
the
me,
seeds that he's planted.
Yeah, what you've shown me, and I thank you for this, is that those of us who, you know, are so used to dealing with our own little worlds, mm-hmm. come into one of these experiences, and all of a sudden we have a whole new way to look at our history, sure. or at our current situations. And that's kind of what these great Chapel Hill professors
well,
do
they,
for us.
Well, the object of these seminars is to get you thinking and get you reading and revisiting the great books and some of the obscure books, some of the books that you know nothing about, and have them filtered to you through these wonderful professors of ours in arts and sciences.
Well, if you didn't recognize the voice, let me tell you, this is Wayne's Word of the Day, Pine.
Many words of the day.
Who is also telling us about what he does full-time. And that is managing the Adventures and Ideas program and some other things he's going to tell us about later after we take a short break.
There's a new spirit around here these days, and with good reason. A Transform Memorial Hall awaits you, heralding a new era for the arts at Carolina. We invite you to be part of the Carolina Performing Arts Series 2005-2006 grand opening season in Memorial Hall. World-class artists from your backyard and around the world are waiting to entertain and captivate your imagination. The best is yet to come. Classical, American roots, dance, urban voices, jazz, North Carolina Spotlight, and World Stage. For more information or to purchase tickets, call 843-3333 or click on the unc.edu/performingarts. Experience the transformation, the hall, the artists, the series.
Flying Burrito, home of the world's most dangerous burrito, is celebrating 20 years of serving our community. Join Phil Campbell, owner of Flying Burrito, for this special moment. Tuesday, February 28th, beginning at 5 p.m. For only $10, enjoy the best bites and beverages that Flying Burrito has to offer. And get this, all proceeds benefit the Chapel Hill Carver Chamber of Commerce's Foundation for a Sustainable Community, which works tirelessly to improve our village. It's Flying Burrito's 20th anniversary celebration, Tuesday, February 28th, from 5 until 8 p.m.
Who's Talking with D.G. Martin can be heard once again Sunday mornings on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're visiting with our own friend and WCHL alum, Word of the Day man, Wayne Pond, and we've gotten him to come talk about the programs in the humanities and human values that he directs at UNC Chapel Hill. I've been pushing him to tell us about the inside scoop on some of the seminars that they have. But Wayne, let's talk about Chapel Hill.
We have no secrets, D.G.
Let's talk about. Yeah, you do too. You play some things close to the vest. But of course, most of these programs, at least the weekend seminars, are here in Chapel Hill or nearby. Mm-hmm. And what I'm interested in is. If somebody from Chapel Hill comes, are they going to see some of their friends? The people from Chapel Hill come.
Oh, indeed they will. We get a lot of people from, as I said, with the many retired people, a lot of teachers. Teachers will see colleagues. We do a great business with people who live in Carroll Woods and Carolina Meadows and Farrington, Galloway Ridge, the Cedars Forest at Duke. And there develops in these seminars, DG, again, I'm the company spokesman, but I think this is essential actually a truthful statement. There develops a wonderful sense of community and camaraderie. These people enjoy one another. We start on a Friday afternoon. We have one talk. We'll have a reception and a dinner. Then we go back for an after-dinner talk, and then Saturday morning come back for two more.
All right, now I'm not here to sell the program at all. I'm really not. This is not a paid advertisement. I had to pay Wayne to come do this.
But
think of – I'm so excited about it. And here's the part of the sales pitch I want to give you. I think at least in the past, you've got a – for somebody who's never come before, you've got an introductory rate, which
we
is
– We do. We offer a 50% discount for people who come to their first seminar. The average cost of a seminar is about $100. And that includes, as I said, a Friday afternoon and evening and a Saturday morning. We send you preparatory materials, background reading to get you ready for the program. And let me add in great haste here, DG, the money that we charge for these programs essentially helps the humanities program to break even. Contrary to popular or anybody else's opinion, we're not making a lot of money.
It's not yet a big money maker.
No.
It's
and
a
it's
service.
Not supposed to be. It is a service of the university, and that opens a door. Let me, if I may, just stand on a small soapbox here. When you talk about the mission of the university, you've got three large terms in front of you. One of them is scholarship, a second one is teaching, and a third one is, well, it's not one word, it's two words, public service. And that's where adventures and ideas fall. That's the
umbrella
that we fall under.
All right,
well,
now I'm going to ask you an unfriendly question.
Sure.
Because if this is a big part of the university's public service, mm-hmm. if you're just entertaining those of us who are senior citizens with stimulating our own ideas, what public service is that?
Well, it is that's a good question, DG. It is a way for alums of the university to stay in touch with what is going on at the university. When it comes to the heart of our public service mission, we're talking about teachers. We're talking about making these seminars available to K-12 full-time, currently employed teachers in the North Carolina. Well, any teacher from, you know, anywhere in the United States can come. And as a matter of fact, we do attract teachers from other states. Essentially, they come from the Southeast. But these teachers come back and they spend the Department of Public Instruction says, okay, we calculate that they're going to have 10 contact hours with professors at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill or Duke or State or Greensboro, Davidson. We draw on professors from all over the region. And those 10 contact hours translate into one or two renewal credit hours. Now, that is public service, in my opinion, of the highest order, because these teachers are coming back. Let me speak, as it were, off the record and on
just
the record.
Just between us.
Yeah, at the same time. The teachers love these seminars, DG, because they're not fretting about disciplinary problems. They come back, and these wonderful professors that my colleagues and I work with take them seriously. They engage them in the subjects that they're going to be – the teachers that they're teaching in our middle and high school classes. And the teachers come away with a real sense of having recharged themselves and prepared themselves to go back into the classroom.
Well, I so good. I was hoping, though, that you would say, well, now, DG, just because you're older doesn't mean you're through.
Oh, of course not.
And that some of these as you point out, a lot of your market is 55 and older, but that these people, although they may have more leisure time, stirring of the intellectual activity, a new way of looking at things is real important because these people still vote. They still stir things up. They're still active in the community. And even if they're say they're retired, they have great potential.
And more, and equally important, DG, they go home and they talk to their nieces and nephews and sons and daughters, and they help the humanities program to bring along the next generation of our participants.
Let's talk about some of your teachers. And again, you've got a whole stack full of them, but some of the folks that we're familiar with, I know that in one of your upcoming seminars, you're going to be talking about the New Deal, maybe, at least as we record
this. Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's coming up this weekend, the 17th and 18th of February.
We've been talking a lot to Bill Luchtenberg about his new book, about the White House Look South,
right,
which has a lot of focus on Franklin Roosevelt. What are y'all going to be? Tell us about this upcoming.
Well, I'll give you a sense here of what we're going to be doing. And this seminar is called America's Social Contract. And the subtitle is The New Deal from 1933 through the year 2006. The New Deal is arguably one of the social political centerpieces in American history. I mean, it sets many precedents when it comes to the way the government interacts with the populace. It was news then, and it continues to be news today. You look at the number of people who are retiring with huge question marks hanging over their heads about how are they going to live, medical care, quality of life issues. Those are all central to President Roosevelt and his vision for the New Deal. What we're going to do in this seminar is look at again, the history and the legacy of this vastly important American political and social enterprise in terms of history and in terms of political science and in terms of law.
What are we going to learn?
Well, Bill Luchtenberg, who is arguably the most distinguished presidential historian living today, is going to begin the seminar with a discussion about, a term that I'm fond of, the platform that we stand on. What did FDR set out to do when he and his colleagues created the New Deal in the early 1930s? What were his assumptions? What were his goals? The obstacles that he ran into? Professor Luchtenberg will give us this historical context for the remainder of the seminar. Then we're going to go on and we're going to talk about, let me give you some of the titles of these talks and tell you about the other speakers. Jack Boger, who is one of our distinguished legal scholars in the law school.
I just have to jump in. I had Jack Boger this past weekend on continuing legal education matter.
Great
and
guy.
Man,
great
what a
guy.
Strong, passionate, but lawyer-like fair and careful presentation.
Jack is going to talk about the post-1936 Supreme Court. He's going to talk about the quote-unquote reconstruction of the Constitution. That's how big an impact the New Deal had on American legal culture. Kevin McGuire, who is relatively new to the faculty at UNC and in political science, is going to talk about commerce, the Constitution, and the fate of the New Deal. The Commerce Clause, the commerce issue, was hugely contentious as the New Deal developed in American history. And then we're going to talk, finally, Michael Gerhardt, who is another, who's brand new to the faculty. He's just completing his first year, came to us from the College of William and Mary. You may have seen him on C-SPAN. He's an expert on American constitutional process, how things happen in the government. He's going to talk about, his talk is called A Constitution in Exile and Other Dilemmas.
Well, this seminar that Wayne's talking about, if you're listening during the first week that we broadcast this in mid-February, this seminar, I think if you act quickly and call
February
Wayne,
17 and 18, DG, February 17 and 18.
If it's not past that time, you can call. Wayne, what number can you call?
Well, let me give you a website, adventuresandideas.unc.edu. Adventures and Ideas, all together, no hyphens or spaces.
Okay.
And you ask for a phone number, 962-1544.
962-1544, and we'll put up the website address on our website where you can go to look at our programs, to get information about the programs, and also, if you want to listen to them again on your iPod.
There you
we'll
go.
Be right back.
If you've been considering wireless phones for your business or family, Team Wireless has the best offers from Nextel, Sprint, and Alltel. Right now, businesses can get one i530 flip phone from Nextel and get up to four additional phones for free. That's right, get one Nextel at only $49.95 and get the next four free. And through February the 18th, buy one Samsung 840 camera phone for $69.95 and get another camera phone free. A great Valentine's Day gift for that someone special and yourself. There's more.
Our high-speed air cards for laptops are still free for business. These air cards turn laptops into high-speed computers in over 212 major markets, and it's the hottest air card available. And finally, our wireless boosters are bringing signals into homes and businesses that have been unable to have good service prior. If you have wireless service outside, we can get it inside. To learn more about any of these special offers and products, call or visit Team Wireless today. In Durham, we're at Oak Creek Village next to Chili's, or call us at 489-2929. That's 489-2929.
Think, reflect, engage, learn. One pleasure of living in Chapel Hill is the opportunity for lifelong learning. Among the best are Adventures in Ideas weekend seminars, brought to you by your friends in the UNC Humanities Program. Adventures in Ideas seminars take journeys of the mind and the imagination. Visit the early days of the Republic with Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America, valuable 200 years ago and today. Get the lowdown on the New Deal. Illuminate the Dark Ages. Come see the Golden State, California in fiction, poetry, and film. Rediscover books that changed the world. Reread Charles Darwin, Rachel Carson, Betty Friedan. Understand the contemporary meanings of Christian, Jewish, Muslim, and Hindu fundamentalism. Stand at the European crossroads of old ethnicities and new economies. Think. Reflect. Engage. Learn. Visit adventuresinideas.unc.edu. Join the UNC Humanities Program this weekend for an Adventures in Ideas seminar. That's adventuresinideas.unc.edu.
Did you know that there's a new way to manage aging skin and wrinkles? This is Dr. Janelle Williams with Central Dermatology. Restylane, a product composed of hyaluronic acid, a substance naturally produced by the body, is a treatment administered to help visibly smooth facial tissue. Restylane is one way in which to preserve beauty and youth during the natural aging process. Restylane is a transparent gel that can be injected into the facial tissue, usually around the mouth and nose, to smooth wrinkles and folds. Once injected, Restylane works temporarily to add volume to facial tissue. The smoothing effect of the treatment will last approximately 6 months.
For medical or cosmetic questions about your skin, call Central Dermatology Center at 401-1994 or click on www.cdcskin.com. Central Dermatology is located on Highway 54 near the I-40 Exchange. Central Dermatology, protecting what protects you.
You can hear D.G. Martin with a replay of Who's Talking from the whole week, Sunday mornings on News Talk 1360, WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm talking to Wayne Pine, and Wayne and I are visiting about, not about Word of the Day. No, not Word of the Day. We're
I'll
talking
give you
about
adventures, adventures and Ideas.
Adventures and Ideas and the great series of seminars. Wayne, we could talk about the programs and the wonderful topics that you present to people. Uh-huh. I want to get on the inside of your work in a couple of ways, and one is you've talked about the seminar on the New Deal, the upcoming seminar on the New Deal. Now, give us the history of that program.
Okay.
How did this program come about, and who chooses the faculty members, and do you delegate this to somebody? Have you got to put this together, and how does it work?
Well, this seminar evolved out of another seminar that we did last summer on the Constitution and political ideology. And in that program, I asked three law professors and a professor of religious studies to come and talk about Ruth Walden, one of our colleagues in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication, to come and talk about the history of the Constitution and to talk about particularly controversial sort of pressure points in the Constitution, the religion clause, the free speech clause, that kind of thing. That was a huge success. I felt the faculty just hit the ball out of the park. So I immediately started a series of conversations with two of them, Jack Boger and Mike Gerhardt. and said, how about we do something on social history rather than purely on legal history? Well, Bill Luchtenberg's name immediately came to mind because, he, as I said a moment ago, this is one of the distinguished presidential historians, if not the most distinguished presidential historian. Bill is many things to many people, but for adventures and ideas, it is just wonderful. He bends over backwards. He says, indeed, I'll help in any way I can. So we had to find a good time to do the seminar. I went back to Professor Boger and Professor Gerhardt, and then we got
So you got them on all board. Together on one weekend where all of them could
yeah,
come
mm-hmm.
together.
And then I don't want to forget Kevin McGuire, who is new to Adventures
and
Ideas.
Once you've got your faculty together, mm-hmm. and do you put one of them in charge of organizing
no,
the program,
what,
or do you
what,
do it?
Typically, the sort of organizing energy for the seminars is in the humanities program itself. Let me, by way of example, DG, let me give you a sense of what we're going to be doing this summer, just and then come back to this thing
right.
about how we organize them. We're going to repeat that seminar on evolution and ethics. We're going to do one called Big Screen Rome. How has ancient Rome portrayed in the movies? Okay, you got lots of directions you can go there. Thanks to Peter Koklanis, one of our distinguished colleagues, runs the University Center for International Programs, and he's a professor of history. Peter originated for us a seminar. He said, let's do a program on Walmart. Is it an empire? Is it good? Is it bad? Does it deserve, you know, the bad press it gets? A couple of professors on campus and one who's a Chapel Hill PhD up at UMass Lowell came to me and said, how about a seminar on the Beat Generation? Jack Kerouac, Neil Cassidy, all those characters. This summer, DG, we have the 250th anniversary of the birth of William Richardson Davey coming up. So we're going to organize a program called Creating Carolina. It's about Mr. Davey and the origins of the First State University. We're going to do a seminar called Sanctity
of
Life.
All this summer?
All this summer. These are examples, DG, of you asked about where
yeah.
the organization
and
energy
all
comes
these
from.
Gonna, are these
wait,
just
wait,
ideas?
Let me finish the thought. Let me finish the thought. We get the topics. Then in-house, we start to talk who would do well. Where are our experts? What's our experience been in this or that area? And we go to our faculty colleagues and say, are you the one to give this talk in this seminar? And if not, who would you recommend? So, you know, to answer your question about how we organize them and put them together, the faculty are in the best sense of the term, the interchangeable pieces in the puzzle. And my colleagues and I in the program are the ones who sort of step back from it and say, here's our theme, here's our topic, who do we go after to put this thing together?
Well, Wayne, one other thing that I'm curious about is in surveying your market, including our friends in Chapel Hill, many of
yep.
my fellow senior citizens who are your regular attendees, do you have any kind of market studies, or you just got the sense of what your market likes?
DG, there is no crystal ball, I guarantee you. At each of our seminars, we distribute to all of the participants a kind of wish list of 30 or 40 topics that we in-house, as it were, are kicking around, and topics that would be fun to do, where you've got, well, I know about one professor, maybe two, who would be a part of this, but we need to find out, you know, exactly what our audience is saying. And we put these topics before these folks, and we say on a 1-2-3 scale, you know, very likely, completely unlikely, you know, what's the probability of your coming to a program on this or that subject? And we collate all that information. And then we aim more or less every semester to do at least two or three of the topics in the following semester that do well on the topic survey.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then the other thing you should mention is that if a seminar has been particularly popular,
yeah.
You might bring it back.
If we do a program and we've got a waiting list of at least two dozen people, that's sufficient handwriting on the wall. We say, all right, it looks, you know, that is likely to do well again. I'll give you a couple of examples. One of our wonderful colleagues is Gerhard Weinberg. the distinguished World War II historian. He has done many programs on the strength of one seminar leading to another. Bart Ehrman, whom you've interviewed, is a marvelous scholar of the New Testament and ancient languages, an historian of religion. Bart did, The Quest for the Historical Jesus was the seminar. I think he did it 8 times, something like that.
You never tire of hearing that. Yeah,
my predecessor, Warren Nord, has a program that he does called God, Religion, and Evil. He's done it now, 8 or 9 times? Warren says that if he left the word evil out of the title, nobody would come. But that's the way, these things kind of take on a life of their own.
Let's take a quick break. I want to come back and return again to the theme of how these seminars and this work has impacted Wayne Pond. He and I will be right back.
WCHL 1360. Time now for Biography for Radio with Jack Perkins. Brought to you locally by the Cedars and East West Partners Community.
His career was in a slump as he resisted the new orchestrated sound of country music. Then at age 61, he had one final hit. His story next on Biography for Radio.
In the game of life, your credit score can make all the difference in the world.
The Smith family is going for a home loan. The referees are reviewing their credit score.
Wouldn't you like to know your credit score before you apply for credit? Now you can. Log on to freecreditreport.com and get your credit score and credit report online for free.
Upon further review, the loan is approved.
Get your free credit report and score with enrollment and triple advantage at freecreditreport.com. That's freecreditreport.com.
He ran away to sea at age 12 to escape his abusive stepfather. When he returned to Nova Scotia, his mother gave him some Jimmy Rogers records. Captivated by the country sound, he bought a $6 guitar. His distinctive yodeling got him a radio spot. And within a year, he had a record contract. As his voice deepened, his fame soared. But he was still unknown in the U.S. Finally, in 1950, he had a breakthrough. His baritone rendition of I'm Movin' On swept up the country charts. Over 45 years, the musician, known for his gaudy rhinestone suits, recorded more than 100 albums. He was a mentor to Elvis Presley, though he hated the influence of rock on the simple country sound. At age 61, after years out of the limelight, he had one final hit. Then RCA dropped him. Bitterly, he retired. In 1999, death stole the widely adored musician known as the Singing Ranger, Hank Snow. For Biography, I'm Lawrence Scott.
Biography is a trademark of A&D.
Biography for Radio, brought to you on WCHL by the Cedars of Chapel Hill and East West Partners Community. The Cedars is the country's premier retirement community. Call 929-1995 to find out more on this very special community. Life has been good to you. Now it gets even better at the Cedars of Chapel Hill.
Who's Talking with D.G. Martin can be heard once again Sunday mornings on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and I'm visiting with Wayne Pond. Wayne, of course, is a friend of all of us at WCHL and everybody who listens to WCHL. He's got another life that he's sharing with us, and that is as director of this program in the humanities and human values. And we've been focusing, Wayne, on the seminars, which have changed, I think, have had an impact on many lives, including mm-hmm. yours. But you all do other things other than these weekend seminars.
We do. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk about them, DG. We do a series of called the Executive Seminars. These are longer programs. These are not necessarily driven by 3 or 4 faculty members who speak. In these instances, we have a moderator who selects readings. We send them to our participants well in advance of the seminar. We do one, for example, down at Pine Knoll Shores, usually in May. This is called our Executive Seminar in the Humanities, and our topic for 3 years now, lest we be accused of being modest in our planning, the topic, DG, is called America and the World. We talk about America. How do we see ourselves? How, as Robert Burns put it, how do others see us? Oh, what some power the gift of Gius. We talk about American culture, American commerce, American business culture. We talk about religion and education.
And who comes? How does it work?
We entertain 20 to 25 people. Who this is a tough call, you know, when we're asking people to commit a whole week
to one extraordinary seminar. Amount of time.
That's right. We start on a Sunday afternoon and we run through the following Friday. The moderator for this seminar is our excellent colleague Lloyd Kramer, who is the Dean Smith Professor of History and the Chair of the Department of History. Lloyd is a consummate scholar of French culture, 18th, 19th, and 20th century French culture. He is a widely published scholar. He's got one History of the World. Talk about ambition.
Thoroughly engaging
that
person,
he did
too.
With R.R. Palmer. And best of all, for the purposes of this executive seminar, DG, Lloyd is a gifted moderator. He has a wonderful touch with drawing people out. As I said, we send all of these readings in advance on all these many, many topics. And Lloyd convenes the group from 9 until 12 for 5 mornings. And you would be amazed at the chemistry, how quickly this group coheres. Imagine yourself. You're sitting with a bunch of strangers.
You're selling it. And let me interrupt you because I'm the market. And what you do, all of us wish for a time of reflection and companionship with people who are also engaged in ideas. It might not matter what the idea is.
Yeah, but not necessarily people who think like us. That's the thing that makes it fun.
Well, of course not. Of course not. But we can't organize this for ourselves. Mm-hmm. You can do that. And when I think about giving up a week or even a weekend for that matter, and also in competition, I can get all the information I want to in books and magazines and television.
But
and all
not in this format and not with this spirit.
Well, I think that you make an incredibly important point that what we do not have a chance to do in those formats is to exchange information on a leisurely basis with our colleagues. So it's an important service. Now, so how do you find that information about
this program? Is coming up the 21st through the 26th of May, as I said, at Pine Knoll Shores at the Trinity Center. That's a retreat center that's run by the Episcopalian Church down in, near Moorhead City.
Yeah, I've been there. It's a great place.
It's a wonderful
place. It's close to
place.
The beach, too. You can go swimming.
that's right. Well, you got the afternoons for reading and reflection and the mornings for the brain work, so to speak. Again, adventuresandideas.unc.edu. There's a link on our website that'll take your listeners to the description of our executive seminar.
Now, Wayne, all right, now, thanks for sharing with us about this program. The other thing we wanted to get to know you, we don't have much time, but I'm interested. I mean, you've had a journey, an intellectual journey, I think, which is amazing. And what I want you to do in a few minutes is just to share that with us and then talk about how your work, both at the Humanities Center and here.
Not the Humanities Center, the Humanities Program.
No, in your prior job.
That's
at
right.
Where you got to meet people with extraordinary intellectual gifts. And now,
that's true.
Here as a part of your profession, you're up against all, the most challenging thinkers. Give us the story of your – what is your intellectual history?
Gosh, DG, I don't think I'm up against them. I think I'm working with them. I Chicago-born, Albuquerque-bred, came to Chapel Hill in 1967 to go to graduate school to sit at the feet of the legendary C. Hugh Holman, Keenan Professor in English, Dean of the Graduate School, Dean of Arts and Sciences, a mentor and a father figure to me. Finished my degree in the mid-70s, went off to Alabama to teach for 2 years. That was the place where
teach
I discovered
what's your field?
Well, American literature. Mm-hmm. I wrote the world's most obscure dissertation on Nathaniel Hawthorne, but went down to Alabama to teach with Bill Melson, who was in radio and TV and motion pictures. RTVMP, we said in those days. He became the dean of a new college of communications down there, and I taught writing. And because I'd worked in radio, at WCHL. I'll tell you, it was a great ride. I did for three and a half, 4 years what Ron Stutz has been doing, as Stephanie Miller says, since before the dawn of time. I loved working at the radio station. I grew up, in New Mexico, where you could get radio signals from virtually any place in the country. Radio is the one true medium. Television is a passing fancy. The internet it's here and it'll evaporate, but radio is forever.
That's great. Well, you definitely are the man of the radio. Wayne, are you engaged? Are you thoroughly engaged intellectually as the expert on Nathaniel Hawthorne and as a teacher? I mean, did you get there, or did that happen later?
I am a well-informed amateur when it comes to Mr. Hawthorne. I enjoyed writing a PhD thesis on Hawthorne's major novels. He called them romances. We would call them novels. I wrote about what Hawthorne formulated as closed societies, and made some arguments about that. And
I guess what I'm asking you is were you always as intellectually curious and widespread thinking as you are now?
How am I supposed to answer?
Well, I know. No. Well, was there an epiphany that happened? Did it happen in your growing up life in high school, in your religious life, in your experience in Chapel Hill at Alabama?
I was blessed with parents who encouraged me to read. And my parents were basically high school graduates. My mother went to secretarial school. My father was a district manager for Campbell Soups and had a dance band on the side. That's what put me through my first 2 years of college. But my folks were you wouldn't call them university people by any stretch of the imagination. And yet they were they encouraged me and my brother to read. And that just was wonderful.
It happened there. I mean,
the early chemistry.
Well, let me ask you this then: So all this happened even before you got to graduate school. But what then has the program in the humanities and human values done for you?
Well,
other than just drive you crazy managing it.
it's actually a wonderful job. It is like
now, Wayne, there's no argument that it's a wonderful job.
Sure.
But can it for you be both a wonderful job and a life-changing experience, or is it just a great job?
Well, it's both, DG. I mean, it keeps you thinking. Look at the circumstances here. I'm working with a world-class faculty.
All right, now, that's what I think. You don't have to explain that to me, but how? How are you different?
You wake up every morning thinking, wondering, agonizing about being happy over an idea, something that is fun to turn over in your mind. This is for me, it's the work of the Lord, because we're staying afloat financially. We want to keep the program solvent financially. But the heart of it is renewal. The heart of it is getting you to think about things that are important to you. Personal things, large social things, political issues. It distresses me, DG, when I hear people say, where do you get all these X professors? You fill in the blank. Liberal, conservative, whatever. The whole idea is to think about what they're saying.
We're not afraid.
And then come to the table and argue it through with them. What are we supposed to do? Parachute in these monolithic thinkers? Of course not. That's not what a university is supposed to do. And that's one of the things that we try to do in our program. We invite you to these seminars to get you thinking about important subjects.
Well, I hate to end it, but it's a good place to end it. I'm sorry you're not passionate and happy with your job.
Thanks for the chance.
Wayne Pond. Thanks for everything you do to enrich our lives, and I'm glad that you've shared with us this extra special thing that you're doing in providing as a part of the program on in humanities and human values, these wonderful series of seminars. We'll have some information about Wayne's program on our website, and if you'd like to listen to this program or any others, you can do it. Go to WCHL's website and plug us in. And we'll talk to you same time tomorrow.
Valentine's Day is a good time to remind you that we love our listeners. This is News Talk 1360 WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's News Talk and Tar Heel Station.
7 o'clock.
Woody, I'm feeling one of those gotta wanna need to get a have a Bojangles moments for their Cajun Spice Chicken. You know, their 8-piece tailgate special with the 8 pieces of chicken, 4 buttermilk biscuits, 2 large fixins, and a half gallon of Bojangles legendary iced tea. Let's go now.
Hey, slow down, Jones. Bojangles is open for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. So before or after the game, we can pick up a Bojangles 8-piece tailgate special.
Hey, maybe we can also get one of their famous Bojangles Cajun Filet Biscuits, or Sausage and Egg Biscuits, or Country Ham Biscuit.
Gotta wanna need to get a have a Bojangles.
Hey folks, Michael has his very best deal waiting for you now at Michael Jordan Nissan. Take home the new full-size Nissan Titan King Cab SE pickup or a brand new Nissan Altima, or test drive the new Nissan Murano S, the urban SUV. Then there's the all-new mid-size Nissan Pathfinder with 3 rows of seats. We have low payments across the entire line of new Nissans, including Sentras and Frontier pickups. Visit us online anytime at MichaelJordanNissan.com. Michael Jordan Nissan. We're on 15501, just north of I-40 in Durham.
This is Ron Stutz. One of the things we do that I'm most proud of is recognize our hometown heroes. People right here in our Chapel Hill, Carborough, Orange County community who do special things to make this a very special place to live. Performance Auto Mall and News Talk 1360 WCHL honor a deserving person each day, Monday through Friday. They all get recognized on WCHL and get a free meal for two at Jim's Famous Barbecue. And once a year, we get everybody together for our big Village Pride Awards recognition banquet. If you know someone who's especially deserving of recognition on WCHL, let me know about them. You can email information to rstutz@wchl1360.com. Village Pride Award winners are special, but don't just take my word for it.
Hi, I'm Sean May. Performance Auto Mall does a lot of positive things in the community, like supporting the Village Pride Awards on WCHL. Thanks, Performance. And thanks to the Village Pride recipients. Performance and the Village Pride recipients are the reason Chapel Hill can't be beat.
Thank you, Sean. The Village Pride Awards from Performance Auto Mall and News Talk 1360 WCHL.
It's time to celebrate Valentine's Day. Don't forget the special person in your life. Happy Valentine's Day from News Talk 1360 WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's News Talk.